Do you like gummy bears, but really not that much? Would you like something that really, if it was left a little while longer, may have become a gummy bear, but instead was plucked prematurely? Then Turkish Delight is the treat for you. Turkish Delight! It's like a bad photocopy of a gummy bear. Turkish Delight does not sponsor Diesel Included. But if we could get Haribo, oh, Jerry, if we could get Haribo, does gummy bears sponsor us?
Oh, my goodness. And my son would love me.
Oh, Haribo, oh, if you're listening.
Haribo.
Listen, we, yeah,
Haribo. Come on, Haribo.
We know that you're the superior product. We know Turkish Delight is just a weak, watered down. It is. It's
yeah,
it's
you got that one little plug in Narnia.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, that's all you got really going for you? Come on, Haribo.
Seriously. So and superior. It is because of that plug in Narnia. That's why I've repeatedly every few years tried Turkish Delight and still got, oh no, this is just a gummy bear that wasn't allowed. It never became a gummy bear. It's pre-gummy bear. It needs to be allowed to reach maturity. You can't pluck that. And you know, I'm not alone in this, Jerry. I got to tell you, we have regular meetings, me and some of my friends, and we voted on this. Yeah, we voted on this at the last meeting, and it was Hemsworth and Pratt were with me.
Okay,
that
it's gummy bears are great. Meeting of the Chris's.
Yep, meeting of the Chris's. Hemsworth and Pratt were sided with me that gummy bears are the way to go. But I got to tell you, Pine and Evans, they were Turkish Delight people. It really the meeting nearly got violent, I have to say.
Yeah, see, like we had a split between Seinfeld and Lewis. But
we should get our meetings together. I would love a meeting of the famous Jerry's and the famous Chris's. I can put that proposal forward and see if they go for it.
This is the challenge I have is that there has never been a cool Jerry.
Well, I don't think
you got Hemsworths and Pratts. I got Seinfelds and Lewis's, which are funny.
Yeah,
but yeah,
you know, Pine and Evans are going to be mad you didn't mention them. That's the truth of the matter.
Fair enough. Sorry, Pines and Evans.
It's fine. It honestly, they're so organized. They keep the meetings going. Usually, Pratt and I just sit in the back and eat the brownies. Hemsworth is a phenomenal baker, believe it or not. He always brings brownies.
I believe it. Like I can imagine that about him.
It is. It's hard not to eat all the goodies before the end of the meeting. Well, Jerry, our guest this week is an incredibly famous Chris. Another, you know, famous Chris. Ooh, and so
I love Chris's.
I know. There aren't enough of us, I feel sometimes. So I've decided what this podcast needed was yet one more famous Chris. So
what's happening?
Allow me to introduce my famous friend Chris. Welcome aboard.
A good hello to you, my friends. How are you doing today?
It's that Chris.
it's that Chris. I
didn't want to give too much away. My favorite Chris. No offense. No offense, Chris O'Shaughnessy, you know, but maybe my favorite Chris.
I'm not even offended.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I was told there was going to be a buffet.
That's admittedly, that is how, that's how we entice all of our guests on here. admittedly, it hasn't arrived yet. Jerry, did you not order?
It's on the way. Buffet? No, it's coming. I did order it. Yeah.
I believe it was croissants.
But naturally.
Croissant buffet. Yeah.
it's in his writer, Jerry. It's in his writer. Croissant buffet.
Side of lemonade.
Christopher Walken, what have you been up to lately?
Did you know that cats, I don't know where I'm going with that, but how are you? It's good to be anywhere. I'm like 90.
I'm Christopher Walken, 95. You're looking good for 90. I'm not going to lie. I hope that I have as good a looks and as good a wit and charm at 90 as you do.
Yeah, boy.
It took a good long while to grow these locks.
You know, I've tried to grow my locks. I can't. It's not working for me. It's not working at all. Christopher Walken, you've made so many great contributions to the world. It's a pleasure to have you with us. What's next for you? What would you be unleashing next upon the planet that will make it a better place?
I tried to walk on water the other day. I still can't. I'm sorry to report.
You've got to be close. You've got to be so close. Yeah.
I levitated once, but only once. I levitated.
Do you know, I remember that music video. I've seen the music video. I think it's, oh goodness, let me think about it. What's it called? Weapon of Choice. You appeared in the music video, Weapon of Choice, and you levitated all over the place. It was impressive.
I don't really like the Backstreet Boys, but they're okay.
But they're okay. Oh, we might get them as guests at some point. Now that you've been on here, that could be what comes next. Let's not kid ourselves. Well, Christopher Walken, we thought you would be the perfect person to ask about a question that has been burning in Jerry and I's mind. You see, we work a lot with third culture kids, with international schools, international students, expats, global nomads. There's loads of words for them. And we thought we would love to hear your opinion, Christopher Walken, as the most qualified person we can think of. Your opinion. on maybe what are the similarities and differences between third culture kids and maybe kids in a not so international environment. We thought you would be the person to ask.
This is borderline evil, Chris O'Shaughnessy. Like, are you gonna make him keep this up the entire podcast?
It was tempting, Jerry. It was tempting.
You invite a guy on and say, can we showcase your Christopher Walken impression, which is fabulous, by the way.
It is fabulous.
But I feel like we're going to, are we going to go the whole, I'm good with it. I'm good with it if you are, but wow.
No, I wouldn't do that to my dear friend. Jerry, may I actually formally introduce you to my good friend, Dylan Malone, who does, you have to admit, one of the best Christopher Walken impressions you've ever heard. Good. You have to admit.
Yeah. Dylan, so great to meet you. Welcome.
Can I talk normal now?
Yeah. You
I
may.
Don't, I don't hear the difference you, yet. Like, you can stop.
I know. I'm still kind of in it. That's how I have to do my voices sometimes. I have to get in it.
How many voices do you have, Dylan? Like, is this a thing?
Last time I counted, which is like a good 4 or 5 years ago, I can do like 50.
Holy cow.
I know. Wow.
What's your next favorite? Is Christopher Walken your favorite? And
I'm my own worst critic. I don't feel like it's that good, but I love Shaggy from Scooby-Doo and my student.
Okay.
That's the thing where I'm teaching currently. There's not a lot of people watching me, which is not a good thing, I think, sometimes. They don't know who's going to teach the class.
I love everything about that. I feel like I would be far more excited to go to school if I didn't know who was going to be teaching the class.
Well, yeah, like the other day, we were talking about Frederick Douglass. We're in a unit in my English class where we're discussing, historical fighters for the fight for freedom. And so Frederick Douglass was one. And I said, like, let's join in and see what Frederick Douglass was going to do.
I feel like that's got to be a first for any listener that we have discussion of Frederick Douglass in Scooby-Doo fashion, right?
Yeah.
Shaggy, love it.
You heard it here first. You heard it here first, and that's one of the things we pride ourselves on here at Diesel and Clooney. Is even we're amazed at the combination of words that make their way out sometimes. So really, this is on par. This is on par. But you are, Dylan. You do actually. You work at a school, and I was excited because, like I said, you work at a school that would not be typical of the sort of schools that, for instance, I get to work with. And so, as we do continually discuss third culture kids, international issues, cross-cultural issues, I thought, how fun would it be to see, again, which of those issues perhaps are more prevalent than we think and maybe actually appear in mainstream or not specifically titled international culture, although I'm sure there's still international influence where you are. And then what some of the distinct, you know, differences and everything are. So that was that, you know, that was basically our pretense for bringing you and 50 voices here. I needed, you know, I needed something that sounded good. And that, that just sounded like a great reason. So every response do in one of your different 50 voices, no pressure, you know,
no pressure.
Won't be exhausting.
The fun part about walking there, I should have, I missed opportunity. I should have, when I said I was walking in, I should have just assumed that it was really Vin Diesel. And George. I should have, what's Vin? Vin here.
Why is Vin here? I know it's gonna. We may need to have he and Clooney as a guest. Just, you know, just if for no other reason, the cover art for that is going to be fantastic.
We're working that out. We're
in negotiations.
Details.
When we're done scaring off sponsors,
right?
Which I feel we've done good at lately. I mean, IKEA won't touch us. Airlines won't touch us. Mm. We're working on it. At this point, I'm worried. Yeah,
Christopher Walken's not coming.
Christopher
anywhere
Walken
near
may
podcast.
Not yeah. may not want to help.
I can confirm. I was at IKEA a week and a half ago, and I took a secret passage, and I didn't even mean to.
Oh,
I was in aisle 19 before I even knew that there was an aisle. I was in 5, and then all of a sudden I was in 19.
Oh, that's a warp, my friend. You found an IKEA warp.
I mean, there was not even a green pipe to go down, and I found myself in aisle 19. It was insane.
Yep. And then meatballs. Wow. Yeah.
And then meatballs.
Didn't run into meatballs. That must have been what I missed, what I skipped.
Wow. You made it through without meatballs.
But I did get batteries.
Naturally.
Okay. Yeah, as there was a warp there somewhere.
If you're on a budget in IKEA and you don't buy the furniture, what's left is spatulas and batteries.
Spatulas and batteries.
And I got, you know,
and you checked those boxes. You checked those boxes. You were fine.
Right.
You were fine. I have to say, I wouldn't actually, if there were going to be a place that I was less than surprised to see a green warp pipe spring up, IKEA probably would be that place. I wouldn't even think it's that out of the ordinary. I'd be like, of course IKEA have green warp pipes. Why wouldn't they?
They would make you build it first.
They would make you build it, yeah. And then you would have more ownership of it. I think we talked about the cognitive bias. You know, the IKEA, you build it and you feel more pride in it. So So there's that.
So Dylan, what do you teach and who do you teach?
8th grade English.
Wow.
It's a challenge for a lot of different reasons.
I was about to say that sounds horrible. but I'd rather hear it from you. Like what's that like? What's it like? It's a challenge. What do you mean by it's a challenge?
I've got a perfect storm of a first year teaching story. Like I didn't know I was gonna be a teacher until 2 weeks before the school year started.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was a family counselor before that. And that was a lot of fun. I didn't like leaving that necessarily, but just the it's a long story. You're not going to go into it. A friend is the principal at the school, and he said, "Hey, you should be a teacher." And I said, "Hey, I didn't know I could." And he said, "Hey, you can." And I said, "Okay."
Wow.
That's pretty much it. I have a background in English and among other things, I can't be pinned down, as my wife likes to say. So now I'm a teacher.
Wow. And a teacher, not just of English, but a teacher of 8th grade English. I mean, there are very few people I meet or have met who've made it past middle school who would look back and say, you know, if I could, I'd go back and be a middle schooler again. Like, that's very rare that people look fondly and would do that again. So you are, you're dealing with kids going through a lot of transition, which, I mean, honestly, that's something in common with third culture kids to be perfectly honest.
That would be a really interesting study. It's like, when you're thinking about third culture kids and non-third culture kids, at what points are there massive differences and what points do they really seem to connect? If I was a betting man, I would put my money on middle school as one of those places where transition is just transition for everybody. And it's chaos and challenging for for middle school students, regardless of where they live. I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting study.
Well, that's okay. So to dive right into it, in that point, one of the things that we commonly say about third culture kids is that they need a little more help when it comes to conflict resolution skills.
Mm.
And part of the reason we say that is a lot of third culture kids, they grow up in transients. So they move around a lot, or the people around them do. So a lot of times they just don't get to practice conflict resolution because they realize every hello is just a goodbye waiting to happen. And right. So if people have an expiration date, why would you resolve conflict? If you just wait a little while, they'll move or you'll move. So you just learn to avoid things. So I'm curious to see, you know, whether that has leaked into, because I have some thoughts on it, but whether that's something that we're finding or that you find is common with the students you work with as well. Would you say that in your time or in your experience comparatively, do you think they have you seen a decrease in conflict resolution skills or is that a noticeable trend?
Well, you didn't tell me I was going to have to think that hard. that is a great question. I will tell you, for scientific purposes, I'm in an inner city school, very low income, predominantly minority, a lot of Hispanic kids, a lot of African American kids. And I say that because culturally, it's a melting pot here. And I think it's not exactly your third. It's not what you guys are kind of used to talking about. But at the same time, I feel like it's close because, you know, in your own backyard, you can have so many different minds and cultures. And downtown Fort Wayne, there's a lot of, because that's where I'm from, Fort Wayne, Indiana. And there's a lot of different culture. It's a melting pot at my school. And I know that the unpopular thing to talk about is COVID, but that has absolutely butchered this eighth grade class, their chance of a normal, you know, any kind of English or math skills. They are far behind.
Yeah.
The sad part about that is that if you have a low income household, the odds that mom and dad are at home to watch Junior get on the computer during COVID, slim to none. What I've kind of inherited is a group of kids that don't even remember how to learn or don't even remember the desire to learn things. So they are very against the grain, and they don't seem to enjoy being told what to do, you know. It's hard. It's very challenging, but at the same time, it's rewarding, which is very similar to my last job as a family counselor. I was dealing with a lot of families that were losing their kids to child services and working to get them back. It's working with people that need to change things about themselves. And boy, it's hard to do. So I say it's 90% like wearing, challenging, and 10% ultra gratifying.
We've gotten in deep already, and the thing that
I went way. I took the tone way to the other direction.
Well, I think if you could have done that as Shaggy, like we wouldn't be in so deep right now, or at least we wouldn't be aware of it. But that's okay. Like that's good. And then, like the thing that jumps out to me as you're talking, Dylan, is one thing that we often don't talk about. Like we often talk about the cultural differences between people who grow up as my kids did outside of their passport culture and kids who grew up here. But we almost like we usually talk about it as if it's like a one for one. But one of the pieces that we don't introduce into the equation is like the idea of privilege, right? And ultimately, expat kids are pretty connected to privilege, right? Like there are very few kids who have to face the realities that your students do, which is a very underprivileged reality, right? Like a disconnected from those advantages that expat kids have, because in order to be an expat, like you got to have some level of affluence, right? In order to live abroad, you got to have the money to get there. And so like, that's a reality that certainly plays into the overall culture. And Chris, I'm really interested in your perspective on this. You know, like, how has privilege played into your experience and the experience of the kids that, that you tend to connect with and speak to?
Woo, we did. We dove in deep. We dove
Shaggy,
in deep.
Shaggy took us in deep.
Shaggy did it. I blame right? Scooby.
Yeah, let me bring us real close to where we want to be. Bring it back a little bit. Peter here. How's it going?
No, I think there's more variety than some people realize sometimes. And I think, you know, privileges, it's a tricky one to talk about. I think for several reasons. Like, I can think of certain places in the world that have, you know, a high third culture kid population, but that probably aren't, you know, you're right. The stereotypical image of a third culture kid would be, yeah, they're there because their parents work for a big international company or a government or a something or other. But there are definitely instances where there's less affluence. I mean, there's a lot of missionary kids, you know, that missionary kids in places that, and that's where privilege gets difficult, because one of the difficulties that I've seen for missionary kids is they would definitely not be counted as privileged in their own home culture. You know, they live by the generosity of others and things like that. And so they, in fact, I can think of several retreats that I've done with gatherings of missionary kids from parts of the world where, you know, they get together, say in the US, and they all come from places where they don't even have running water half the time. And and they can all tell stories about, you know, the guerrilla warfare going on just outside their village and things like that. So they would not be considered privileged in the US, but ironically, in the locations they're at, they are considered very privileged. That, you know, if they if they were to compare themselves to, you know, their local neighbors, they're absolutely privileged. And that creates a strange dichotomy to be considered privileged in one area of your life, vastly underprivileged in another area of your life. And then there are, I can think of, you know, quite a few big cosmopolitan cities where there's sort of a mixture side by side of a pretty affluent international businesses or diplomacy or whatever. And then certainly a mix of people where they were born into this incredibly cross-cultural international place. So I think there might be, more links than we realize. With
it's a little more complex than one or the other, right?
Yeah, I think this is something
that a colleague of mine blew my mind with, because I was speaking to a client of ours and saying, basically, I called them privileged. And this was somebody who was my colleague, speaking to a client, and she stopped me and she said, wait. It's not, they are privileged. It's, they have privilege. And it really opened up the whole idea for me, is that privilege, when we talk about privilege, it's something that I have, not something that I am. It's not my identity. It's something that is a reality for me. And the reality for me is that I have access to things that other people don't have access to. And everybody has some level of privilege. But the levels are really, really different. It sounds like, Dylan, you're working with people who, as far as privileges that they have, it's pretty low, right? Like, it's pretty, they don't have access to some of the things that, that a lot of people have. That's just an interesting reality. I think in the way that we view things. So I'm curious to hear more about, like, your experience in the inner city. What is the connection point between you and your students? How do you connect to your students?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of people in this field that I'm in that try to tackle it by saying, I want to help you. I'm here for you. I would like to teach you something. I find that that's a little off-putting. It's the very same reason that when our dress code for my counseling job was khakis and proper attire, I would often show up in jeans, because you have to know who you're talking to and what you're asking of them. So I find that when I show up and I tell the kids, yeah, you got it bad, what are you going to do about it? That goes over much more in their favor than for me to say, oh, how can I help you? What can I do for you? And so far, they've responded magnificently. There have been several instances where the kids are like, wait, you're not going to try to tell me I'm messed up? No, you're not. You're fine. You've been dealt a hand, just like everybody. Your hand isn't good right now. But at 14 years old, you have the rare opportunity to decide now, what would you like to do about that? And I just find that in counseling and just everyday discussions, teaching, whatever it is, whatever situation I'm in, I don't just assume you're a victim. And I'm not going to put a race behind that. I'm not going to put a culture behind that. I will just say, in general, if you are a person who cannot look in the mirror and take ownership for what you could have but don't talk to me about what you don't have because of something out of your control. There's a big distinction there. I will fight for anybody that has less privilege, that needs assistance. I have a harder time finding the energy, the motivation to help someone who would like a handout when they have two legs. And that's a conversation I've had with adults too. It's hard. You don't like to be told that when so many places tell you, oh, just apply for this or go do that. And then they're content with that. And I think that as a culture in America, at least where I'm from in the Midwest, you've got people who have figured that out and are milking it. And then you've got others who are tired of it. It's that second group that I love to talk to. It's that second group that I say, yes, your hand is crappy, but here are some resources. And I would love to help you with that. And that's, I'm trying to be careful as I can with this conversation, being that
it's a tricky conversation. Yeah, sure.
But I also, I don't like the conversation of privilege when it's tied to a culture or tied to a race or a group of people. I much would rather have the conversation on an individual level. What has been dealt to you personally? I don't care if you're white, black, or purple. What has happened to you is an individual walk. And I'm here for it. I'm here to hear it. And I want to care for you. I don't want to care for your group because I don't know anything about your group. I know about you and you're in front of me. So that's kind of my mentality with it.
Well, and I think as you're speaking, like there's a real opportunity there to kind of bridge the gap between the realities of the meta and the micro, right? Like
companies started
zooming out and the zooming in. Because if you are genuinely asking that question, like I want to hear from you, what's your experience, then ultimately in that experience, there's going to be room for the reality that race and gender and ethnicity and all of those things have been a part of their story. But if you stop and listen, and if you're really willing to listen to the story of people, and not to just give them a free pass because of whatever, but to really listen to the experience of people, all of those things are relevant. Like all of those things, like there are big things and there are small things that play into our realities that shape the way we experience the world and that we encounter things. And I think as TCKs, as monocultural people, like there are so many dimensions of who we are and our experience that play into our narrative and our story that change the story, right? And so I love your approach of just saying, hey, let me listen first, right? Let me hear from you. Let me hear what your story is. And then we'll go from there, right? Let's not start by assuming we understand everything about who you are before we even have a chance to listen. I love that. I think that's brilliant.
Well, I think there's so much, actually, that both of you said that I think is a massive bridge between.
But TCK's, mostly me.
But like mostly Jerry, obviously, mostly.
Mostly very Jerry. Smart.
Yeah, it's that's why we pay you the big bucks.
I can't. I got no impressions though.
Well, that's why we also pay Dylan the big bucks. Let's not kid ourselves. The big bucks, just like the buffet. They're coming, guys. They're coming.
I will sit in third chair anytime you want. This is I'm having a great time.
But I do. I think the focus on individuals, I can see so much consistency there because even as both of you are speaking, I can think of so many instances where, I mean, kind of what Dylan, what you said, you know, individually where you say, yeah, you've been dealt a bad hand. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's such a wise approach. And honestly, I think the flip side is also, I feel it is just as valid to say to people, you've been dealt a great hand. What are you going to do about
it? Yeah.
But really either end. And I think that it's easy for other people and even for ourselves to categorize. Like I can think of, I've heard both extremes. I've heard from third culture kids who are told consistently, they're told, look, you've got an amazing life. You've seen more of the world than most people will ever see. You have access mm-hmm. to things that other people have never had access to. And so the assumption is made. And their retort to that sometimes, and they won't even, I think sometimes they're hesitant to say it, because they're like, yeah, I know, but you know what? It is hard losing my friends every year. It's hard not being able to answer where I come from. It's there was a study that I read that made massive correlations between very high and very low income, and it said that what it basically came down to was, to thrive as humans, we need just the right amount of adversity. That too much is actually as dangerous as too little. And they looked at, for instance, you know, quality time with your parents, and I think you even mentioned that a little bit, Dylan. And they found that, yeah, if you come from a very low income family, you probably don't get much time with your parents because they're very busy working to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. Ironically, on the other end of the extreme, if you come from a very high earning family, you probably don't get much time with your parents because they're working hard to maintain that very high income. Mm-hmm. And so they found the amount of quality parental time actually began to mirror itself, that, you know, there's a bell curve, and on both extremes, extreme wealth and extreme poverty, you begin to lack parental guidance and influence. And so I think being able to look at the individual is so incredibly important, because you could paint it both ways. You know, you really could come at it, no matter what your circumstance in life, your scope is going to make a huge difference. And we're desperately influenced by what's around us. So like I said, for missionary kids, that moving scope is difficult, because they're like, yeah, when I live out where I live on the field, like, I'm doing better than everyone. I'm super lucky. Then I return to my quote unquote home country, and everyone is like, you live without running water? What? And so that scope shifts. And that's the difficulty with scope is, you know, you could take someone living in poverty in the US, and you could find somewhere on the planet to compare them to where they actually come out looking good. The problem is that scope doesn't always help. You know, if you're kind of limited by what you're surrounded by. And I think that means mm-hmm. the individual approach is so very important. I think that's a huge connection. That is a point of commonality, I think, between people. I don't think just third culture kids and monocultural kids. I think just humans, is that we all have an individual set of circumstances.
Yeah. 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 Dylan, what's the impact that you want to have on your students?
I would love for them to learn to fight for themselves instead of waiting for others to fight for them. Mm-hmm. That would be not just for like money, or, you know, for English. Let's start with English. They come in and they learn English from me. I don't want.
No, wait. Let me pause right there, because when you say that, you also said you had a large Hispanic Latino population. Are they learning English for the first time, or is this like me, the American white kid, taking an English class? Like, what's the? Just set the stage for us. Both. Okay.
It's the kids that I have that are from ELL have graduated from a point
where they can speak it fluently enough to be in a regular English class.
Okay. Okay.
But that doesn't mean they don't have difficulties.
Right.
So they still misspell a lot of things. There's a lot of, there's a lot of work.
Yeah. But this is primarily like non first language English speakers.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Just setting the stage there.
More of a difficulty I have in the classroom, more than the cultural barrier, is the special ed barrier. There's such a need for special ed teachers in the district that I have special ed students in my regular English class that require special attention and get none. Because I have to teach the class. There's supposed to be special ed teachers doing that, like side by side with me, stepping in and I'm going to help this one while the teacher's talking. And like there's a real need for teachers in general, but special ed teachers especially. There's such a dire need as we go through this odd time in our world where people's emotional and all kinds of issues are cropping up from a psychology standpoint. Mm-hmm. The suicide rate, I'm going all over the place right now, but the suicide rate is like off the chart, no matter where you go in the world. And right. So there's a real moral crisis we have as a people, as a human race. Like, we have to figure out how to stop this issue with children first. Mm. You know, that's coming. You know, in the next 10 years, we're going to see just how magnified these social issues are with our culture right now. And that's what I'm seeing in a group of 14-year-olds that are learning more about life through TikTok than they are from me. Or from, not that I have to be the master of all knowledge, but I certainly would hope that I've got Kesha beat, or I don't know. There's, you name the artist.
Good luck with that. Well,
yeah. Just because you have a microphone doesn't mean that you're an arbiter of truth.
Although, having said that, that is kind of the premise Jerry and I are going on. We feel we have microphones.
Well, and I don't feel like we're alone in that space. Like, I feel like there is a world of people out there. There are a lot of people out there who have a microphone, and because of that, like they're gaining influence. They, like, if you can grab attention, you've got influence in this world. And like, and Dylan, as you're speaking, like it hits home for me personally. Cause I have a 13-year-old, you're speaking about 14-year-olds. Like that's the place, right? Like that's the pinnacle. So I got a few months left. But I've got a 13-year-old who is a TCK. He grew up in China. And now he's in American public schools, right? Like, so there's so much confusion and there's so much frustration and there's so much, like, this kid who grew up in a very privileged bubble, in China, and like had that experience of international school and so guarded and shielded from so many of the big issues, is now watching playground fights happen every day. Watched a fentanyl drug bust happen, in which the head of security at the school, through contact with the fentanyl, overdosed and went to the hospital and nearly died, right? Like, that's his reality right now. And so the contrast between his previous experience and his current experience is very, very real. And he's trying to bring those two experiences together and understand, like, what is reality? What's real here? And I'm trying to help him with that, but it's a challenge as a parent. Like, what advice would you give to parents? Not just parents who are like me, who are very complex and confusing and have this international and and domestic experience, but what advice would you give to parents who are raising 14-year-olds?
The most cliche answer of all time, and it's cliche because it's true. Talk to them. Have a conversation. Yeah. And don't say, how was your day?
Crap!
Just find creative ways to say,
what am I supposed to say then?
There's a website. I don't remember it offhand, but just Google it. Honestly, you'll find it real quick. Things to say other than "How was your day?" We'll have a list. I'm not even joking. It sounds like a joke. There's actually so many.
No, I believe it. Yeah.
And one of my favorite go-tos. You can go back to this well as many times as you want. What's one thing that made you laugh today? What's something that you learned today?
That's so good.
What's something that made you mad today?
Mm.
And then I quickly follow that up, because I have a 7-year-old, with who do I need to beat up today? once I hear what little Timmy did.
That's my new favorite question. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish someone would ask that for me. I just want someone to ask who to beat up for me on a daily basis. That's...
Chris, who do you want me to beat up today?
Oh, nobody, Jerry. Everyone's actually pretty nice to me.
All right.
I don't know what
but I like to be asked. I like to be asked.
Jerry, I don't know what your upbringing looked like, but the ability, or not the ability, but the privilege, we're talking about privilege, the privilege to be able to ask dad a question about life is so undervalued in our culture right now.
That's good.
I want you to realize that you don't have to do a lot of anything. Which is nice, because I'm also a dad, and I like to sit down and not do anything sometimes. But all you have to do is develop a safe place for your son to ask questions of you.
To be real, right?
Just let him know. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to tell me everything, but I've been where you are, and I would love to hear when you struggle. I would love to try to help. And sometimes that's not well received, but just throw it out there, because it might not happen that day. It might be a month later,
right?
Or it might be a year later.
Yeah.
And eventually, this is true for all walks. I've had probation kids call me out of the blue. How did you get this number? So-and-so gave it to me. Oh, what can I do for you? I just wanted to thank you at the age of 25 for helping me think that through. And I say, you're going to have to really remind me what you're talking about. Because I then they go back and they say, do you remember that time when I broke the windshield? And I say, oh, you're that one. Okay. And then they tell me, they say, you know, you had some thoughts and I didn't want to hear it, but now I get it. And so sometimes as a dad, you don't know when your words are finally going to breach that part of the brain that isn't fully developed yet in your children. So just know that when you feel frustrated and you don't want to talk to your child because they just don't listen, well, that's true, they don't, but they soon will. And if you burn that bridge, they won't go back to it.
That's very powerful. That's really good.
Well, and I think that all honestly ties back into my original question about conflict resolution. The reason that I asked that one is I'm guessing, and from what you've just said, I think it's true. You know, we originally say, as I said, TCKs, it's a struggle for them because they can make relationships disposable. So they learn avoidance because they just don't have to. But I think that's probably crept into, and I think is merely a symptom of some of the wider issues you're talking about. I think that's probably crept into mainstream culture. Because, like you said, because of TikTok, because of everything available to us, because of moving cultural trends, we do have far less direct interaction. We do have, whether it's between parents and their kids, I would guess probably even between, you know, kids themselves. We've all seen it. The amount of times you go to a public place, almost anywhere in the world, and kids are all on their phone. And I've heard the counter argument that kids are like, well, we're texting each other. And that may be true, but the richness of communication there is not the same as actual face-to-face interaction. So I think the decline that we know about of or the lack of conflict resolution skills and TCKs, I think honestly has crept into mainstream culture, and that for everyone, conflict is harder now because we have so many avenues of avoidance and distraction. And for a lot of the very reasons you said, we find it harder and harder to communicate in real terms with each other. But I think the takeaway really is, even if it is harder, it's still worth the struggle. You know, I really like how you put it, that honestly, you may feel like you're not being listened to, but talk anyway, because they soon will be listening. And I think, again, you know, my original thoughts starting with conflict resolution, I think they are, that's part of this bigger issue that you brought out, that there are going to be things that threaten our communication abilities. There are going to be, the technology has brought us great things. It's caused difficulties, you know, the all sorts of different things in the world, not just technology, social, economical trends, all kinds of stuff. But you keep pushing, you keep going, you keep seeing people as individuals, and you keep investing regardless. And that I think is common. It addresses challenges that you'll face regardless of your upbringing, TCK or not.
Like there's a reality that we live in. Like it's the zoom out and the zoom in reality, right? Like when you zoom out, like we're all human, and we all have those same characteristics, and we all have the same responses. Like who we are is essentially the same. But when you zoom in, we're all like unbelievably individual and unique and real. And I love what Dylan is bringing to the table right here, like to this conversation of like, this is how I respond to it is, let's me and you one-on-one. Let me sit down with you and listen to you. Let me hear your story. Let me hear the narrative that you're living with. And from there, like that's where we begin, right? Like, let's start with your story and let me hear that first, and then we'll go from there. Right. Like that's a beautiful place to start with. And I think that's wisdom for all of us, whether we're growing up as expats, whether we're growing up as military kids or missionary kids or business kids growing up overseas or inner city or inner city domestic, having like no opportunity to ever move outside of our city, let alone our country. Right. If we'll sit and we'll listen and say, what's your story? That's a pretty powerful place to begin.
Dylan, we're so grateful that you're willing to share a bit of your story with us. I mean,
Mic drop. Yeah, that's good stuff right there.
I think,
don't care who you are.
I think we're gonna have to have you back is really all there is to it. You've got more nuggets of wisdom to drop.
Well, we've got like
more voices.
We've got like 3 of 50, right?
Yeah. Plenty
more.
I'll bring plenty more. Which before you go, Dylan, you do have another podcast, which, you know, so if people wanted to hear more of your dulcet tones, where could they hear more from you?
Oh, Lord Chris, what a a nice thing to lead me into a shameless plug.
That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for.
I have a podcast with my brother-in-law, and we discuss movies. We break down popular movies that don't get attention from the Oscars because they're not what I would call
very good. Sorry.
Culturally in the moment, I'll say. we talk about movies from we kind of like to kick the critics around a little bit when they're just off pace. And it's a lot of fun. It's called Movies and Chill with Zach and Dill.
It's a rhyme.
It's such a good name. We'll put a link. We'll put a link on the episode information.
I'd love to have you guys just come and talk with us, because I feel like that would only help our ratings to have popular, amazing, famous people on our podcast.
Oh, I mean, And that's coming from Christopher Walken. So you know we've made it, Jerry. We've made it.
I'm in.
I mean, either Christopher Walken or like I said, I'm going to bring Adam West the next time.
Yes!
Oh my gosh.
Please take us out with Batman.
Yeah, say goodbye to our listeners as Adam West.
Batman, it's time for us to go. Time to go. One more time to the Batmobile.
Yes!
So good. Oh, listeners, thanks for joining us for this tasty, tasty treat. And Adam West, Christopher Walken, Scooby, Shaggy, Dylan, thank you.
Take care, listener.